So hi, Robert. I'm just really appreciating you being willing to sit with me and talk to all of us about your experience with MKP, who you are, and all of the stuff that you've experienced along the way. I know you've been with the project for a really long time. So when actually was your weekend that you went through?
Well, I went through in November of 1992. It was the second DC training.
Oh.
And I had heard about it through another warrior brother who thought I might be interested. And it turned out that a man that I was in a men's therapy group with was also involved. And so it felt like a good idea. And I went through it, as I say, in that second training. In 92, and so I've been was coming on 27 years this year.
Yeah. So when you were thinking about going to the weekend, was there stuff going on inside of you that you wanted to try to discover, or were you just curious? What was the sort of, other than the men inviting you, was there anything internally that had you feeling like you wanted to do it?
Well, yeah, there's a long history behind it. It started in Well, started probably at birth, but that's another story. In 1984, my late wife had her first bout of cancer, and the way we reacted to that afterwards, it was very short and cured by surgery. But we both wound up in individual therapy, and I chose the Jungian model and went to a woman therapist, deliberately chosen because I knew I had mother issues. And after about 3 years, she said, "It's time for you to go out and play with the boys," and directed me to a male therapist who had a men's therapy group. And so I had experience of sitting, what we would now say, sitting in circle with men. And it was a very powerful experience, and I wanted to explore. I had heard about the Iron John book and the stuff that was going around, but I wasn't deeply involved. I wasn't in men's council like a lot of other men were at that time. But this, and I was doing volunteer work in the local community mental health center in something called the Men's Program, which was for male batterers, abusers. And that's where I met this other man who was also a volunteer. And in telling my story there and sharing with the men in the circle, he saw something that he thought I'd be inter would make me interested in this work. So it was personal growth. It was also interest in the men's movement that was becoming stronger there. And underneath all that was the fact that I knew that my sexuality was still an issue. I was married heterosexually, and I knew there were some other issues, and I knew I wanted to explore those. So that was part of it as well. And it showed up on the weekend as I'm no longer surprised that it did.
So, what was the big takeaway from the weekend? What did you take away that, and then we'll get into this a little bit more, but that had you be getting so engaged and involved in the project?
Well, there's the from integral perspectives, the personal experience was profound. I came away just blown open, and wanting to continue the work. Part of me that observes the systems. I was fascinated by the structure of the weekend, how really well put together it was, the passion of the staff. I was lucky enough that Rich Tosi was on my weekend, David Carr was on my weekend, Michael Greenwald, I believe, was on my weekend, and several others. And I just said, yeah, I want to do this. Prior to doing MKP, I was deeply involved in Toastmasters several years. And my wife used to say that, that wasn't where I belonged, that, I needed something more challenging, something more rewarding. And she quickly saw that in MKP. She did Woman Within a year later, and we both became very active and in the two organizations. And it really helped us individually in dealing with, as I began to come out within MKP first and then in the rest of the world. So it was very powerful. I did my first staffing a year later in October 93, which Rich Tosi led. So that's how I got to know him and a little deeper. And Doug Gilmore, who had come to D.C. from Milwaukee, and had become our second center director. For some reason, I mean, he never told me why, but he asked me to be on the staff selection committee. Mm-hmm. And that was my first institutional position. And then I became a training coordinator, and for the next 4 years, basically ran all the weekends. So I was getting involved. I remember a weekend with David Carr. That was a typical David Carr experience of exploring every aspect of humanity and history and everything else. And subsequently, both Rich and David said that someone had pointed me out to them, and they actively pursued getting me involved. I became center director in 96, and then in 97, I had breakfast with Bill Kauth at Glen Ivy and wound up standing for center council chair. And that put me on what was then called the newly then formed executive committee, the XCOM. Uh-huh. And I served on the XCOM in a number of roles for the next 10 years. So I had a 10-year stint of being at the institutional level, uh-huh. or what was then, first the New Warrior Network and then the Mankind Project, when it was still and growing throughout the country and throughout the world. First as the center council chair and then as secretary when David Carr was, David Carr and Curtis Mitchell were the chairman. So I was floating around all the time, got involved in a lot of things. The ones that I'm probably most proud of was introducing Thomas Griggs to the national level and the vision model and multicultural. Deeply involved in getting the ethics committee in place. Also involved in supporting Thomas Saylor Brown in Arizona and getting the first, what was then called the Gay Bi Gateways going, getting them approved at the institutional level, getting the Rainbow Gathering approved as a MKP event, sponsored event, so that we had insurance and things like that. So, you know, got to be known. Then in 2004, I sort of burned out. The whole multicultural, cultural wars, just, I had it. And I went on sabbatical. In that time, before that time, I'd become a co-leader and then a full leader. So I was also running weekends. So I just took a sabbatical. And the sabbatical was from everything except my eye group.
And the local. And that was 2004.
2004 going into 2005. That I intended to come back and I did get recertified. Well, I never actually had to be recertified because the sabbatical was within the 2 year time frame. Mm-hmm. But I reactivated and thought I'd be back in doing things. And then at that point, my wife's second cancer came back metastasized and we realized that we were dealing with an end of life situation. And I decided I was going to limit myself as long as she needed me.
Yeah.
I remember going to be recertified in 2008 and knowing what the question was going to be, which is, why are you even here? And you know, I was able to explain that both she and I knew how important this work was to the world and to me, and that we had made arrangements for her to have support and that I would only do one or two weekends a year. She wanted me to do it. And so I did. She passed in 2009 and I came back to Glen Ivy in 2010 with no intention of getting involved. In fact, I invited one of the men from my community. I said, your job is to keep me from raising my hand. And at that time, of course, was when we regionalized and there was a question of who would represent the leader body internationally and nationally. Mm-hmm. And the chair decided he wanted to be international, but then he needed a USA rep. And somehow or other, I got chosen.
Nobody was there to hold your hand at that moment. You just
were. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
And so, before you go any further on this piece, tell me when your wife was going through that and she was on her way out. Was the I group really important for you?
Oh, God, yes. I'm still in the same, quote unquote, same group. Uh-huh. For 27 years. There are two of us from that first training still in it. It has met, it started in my house. We did what would now be called a PIT, but it was then called the integration group training. And we met in my house, and then we moved, and we went through several places, and it was essential. And in fact, the last week of her life, when she was in home hospice care, I called the group and I said, I can't leave the house. Would you come here? And they did. And many of them who knew her over the many years had a chance to say goodbye. And then after she passed, I invited the group, because we, at this point, we were paying for a church. I said, well, I'd like the group to come back to my house, and we've been meeting there for the last 10 years since she died.
Wow.
And we now have 20 members. So yeah, I mean, just having a place where I could go and share, and other men had been through similar things. And in fact, one of my dearest friends, his partner of 20 something years, died just a year later. And so we were going through a lot of the grief process together. I mean, I did grief counseling and I did the living with cancer counseling, but the I group was where I could most clearly be. And
because
they suffered through all the institutional information that I...
Well, I'm just, you know, the I group is such a special place, but, and I just wanted to hear your story about how they were there for you and how you process what was going on inside.
There's no way I could have gotten through it with whatever equanimity and strength I got without the I group.
Yeah. All right. So tell me, how did you get to be chair? Now you came back to Glen Ivy.
Came back to Glen Ivy in 2010. And
the vulnerable moment with no help to hold you back, you got into a role and now you're back online.
Yeah. Well, at Glen Ivy, the incoming chair, or who was standing for chair, David Bowerly, said he would very much like me to be on his board. And I said, no way, I'm not ready to come back to that. And then when the leader body asked me to be their rep, I went to him and said, okay, I'll be on the, be on the board in one role or another. And so I did. And I had been in conversation with a number of men about how to structure the chairman position, because I had seen every chair pretty much going through and just being totally, totally burned out after, before the 2 years were up. An exhausting role, as you know, and I know.
I'm learning.
And I knew from, again, Toastmasters, that they had a, they actually had five, I think it's five levels of roles that you moved up in, and then you were only the international chairman for 1 year. And I thought we could move to that way. And so in structuring the bylaws for the USA, we were talking about that. But we weren't ready to do it right away. And we did have an executive director, and we tried a couple of ways of doing that, and it never quite worked. And over the, let's see, so David Bowerly was chair for 2 years, and then Mike Elser was chair. And during his term, he and I talked about moving to the three chair position. And in his second year, we actually instituted it. And I was the first chair elect in 13. Yes, 13. And so in 14, I was elected. We still had the election at that point, even though the intention was for the chair elect to move up. And so I became chair in 14. And circumstancing led to the chair elect, my chair elect, not being quite ready to move up. And so I wound up having technically a 2 year term, but like everyone else in the middle of the second year, I had had it.
Yeah. Well, I just think that's sort of interesting that you guys finally, we finally found this great new way, but it wasn't going to come easy. So,
And one of the big pieces in that was not only was it about, you know, the purely institutional structure, it was also our becoming aware of the importance of the integral model to the work we do. in early in my term in 14, I ran across Laloux's work. Well, ran across it because it was publicized in Integral Thinking,
yeah.
Integral Life. And I read it, and I asked everyone to read it. And I remember getting a phone call from Tosi saying, "Have you seen the footnote on page 243? And I said, "What?" And it was a whole thing about us.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the only volunteer organization where men pay to volunteer.
Yeah.
And then I found out Laloux was a warrior, so we made contact with him. But that idea of moving to what they call a second tier organization has become very important, which meant the leadership has to have that consciousness.
Yeah.
And you know that because you've been through the vetting process.
Mm-hmm.
And the first time around, we didn't quite get there.
Yeah,
and so then the man who came in as chair-elect, Julian, was kind enough to step up in the second half of 15 to really take the reins. I was still technically chair, but that was when I went to Paris or to France for the international meeting and several other things, and then to Hawaii for the elder gathering, which was sort of the nice things that chairmen get to do occasionally. And he took the reins. And so we both had a year and a half technically.
Yeah.
Since then, thank God it's worked the way it was planned with.
And I think it's well ingrained. And I think we're getting more and more people interested in leadership at different levels. And I think less people are afraid of being overwhelmed. And, you know, certainly my experience is it's plenty of work. But with the three chair system, it's like, even though it's chair elect chair and chair, immediate past chair, it's like three chairs, and that's the way I've worked it and developed it at here now is that I encourage the other chairs to call themselves chairs, not just.
Yes. Yeah. And I've been doing that too, referring to the three chairs.
Yeah.
And it's just, who's the point? He's the one who gets all the arrows. And the other two, you do.
I occasionally take off the bullseye, but it's not always off. So, one more thing. You've, in my judgment, gotten the most prestigious honor that exists in Mankind Project, and that's the Circle of Honor. And just give me a little bit about that, and we'll kind of start to close with that.
Okay. Well, for the 25th anniversary, George Durrani had the idea of having an honor. And that's all it is. It's a designation.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't carry any institutional weight. It doesn't carry any monetary award, God knows. It's simply a recognition of men who have contributed significantly to the mission of the project.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like the Ron Herring Inside, if you will, but more. And it's quite honestly, it's some of it is longevity. It's about men who have been around a long time. And so he approached the founders, Rich Tosi and Bill Kauf, and they liked the idea, and they selected some men. I mean, and mostly the first class in 2010 were men who were there at the beginning in various ways. Curtis Mitchell for the lodge work, Don Jones for the elders, Billy Hill for bringing Australia online, and they honored the founders as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Including Ron Herring posthumously. The second class in 2015, and I know I'm leaving some men out of that first group, I can't remember at the moment. The second group were, I would say, the men of the explosion in 92 to 95.
Mm-hmm.
I was honored. And then, for the work I did in mentoring Germany, for being on, structural, so much of the structural change throughout the time. And Rick Bronick and James McCleary for their work in multiculturalism, as well as their long history of NWTA work and also the Folsom work. Right after the ceremony in France, which is why I went to France instead of our representative to receive the award, at the World Elder Gathering in Hawaii, Bill and Rich said, you know, they know that their involvement will come to an end and they'd like the circle to go on. So the idea is that the circle will become self-perpetuating in terms of selecting the men who will be for the next round. So we just have selected the 2020 class. Yeah. And it was, you know, Rich and Bill and George and David Carr and myself who winnowed the many, many men who could be honored to, in this case, a group of six. Mm-hmm. Not intentionally, but it turned out to be that many of the men who took the lead administratively and kept the organization alive and going when we had some serious crises. Mm-hmm. Joe Lauer, Carl Griesa, Tony Wilkinson for at the international level, John Levitt, who has been tireless in the work in the United States and reunification and so on. And, you know, choosing to recognize other regions as well, Christophe de Pierre, for his work in creating the French community. So, yeah. I, you know, this will go on.
Yeah.
And it's a great honor.
Yeah, we could just talk on and on, and I think if we need to close for now. But I just want you to know that I've had the experience of working directly with you for the last 2 years. And what you have given to me personally is the level of support that I could not be doing this work without you. Both the technical pieces, the way you have my back and remind me of things that I'm potentially forgetting, has been priceless for me. And I really, really appreciate you for that. And I know you've done that in hundreds of places over the years you've been here, over and over again. And I know you've stepped back again for a little bit, and you continue to be there for me consistently. So I want you to just know how important you are to the leadership of the organization, but you're seeing, and the evidence of what you've created and what you continue to do just keeps making sure that we're here in the kind of quality way that we need to be. We could not be here without men like you, and specifically what you bring is unique, special, and hugely important. So thank you for who you are and how you've changed my life and the other lives around you and throughout the project. It makes MKP what it is. So thanks, Robert. Thanks for your time and your efforts and everything else that you've given along the way. So thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.